Hi, everybody. Welcome to Whiskey in the Writings. My name is Joe. I am your host as we talk about the Bible while we sip some whiskey. So whatever you have, pour a drink. I have my Uncle Nearest here, 1856. I have my cube of ice. And so go ahead and pour your drink. Let's take a sip and get into our discussion today. Cheers. All right, so we're going to begin a series on Genesis. Today, we're going to be looking at Genesis chapter 1. And this Genesis chapter 1 conversation is going to take three different videos to get through because there's so much packed in. And the reason why we're going to spend some time in Genesis is because there's so much about this story that's misunderstood and just not known by most people. And so whenever I've taught Genesis 1, I often find that people hearing it for the first time, they are excited that it finally makes sense to them, but they're also pretty frustrated because they've never heard it before, people that have grown up in church. And so for us today, we're going to unpack it. And so I hope you have your Bible in front of you as we read the text. Again, this is going to be three parts because there's so much to get through. And so we're going to begin. We're going to get started. Genesis chapter 1. And just so you know, as we read through this, I'm going to stop a lot and I'm going to give background. I'm going to give context and information to what's going on here. I'm reading out of a translation called the NET. It is the New English Translation. It's one of my favorite translations. I like it because of all the footnotes that scholars put in there to help people as they read that are trying to understand it. So it's one of my favorites. So you might have an NIV, you might have an ESV, you might have an NLT. Doesn't really matter. It's all going to be somewhat the same. There are some variations. We can get into that later. But as we read along, we're going to stop a lot. We're going to talk about it. So just a heads up on that. So let's start Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. This is what the author tells us. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Stop right there. Okay. So when you hear that statement, what do you picture? Do you picture the globe, the astronauts, you know, looking back on Earth and seeing the Earth and seeing kind of space? Or do you see like the place you think you're going to go when you die, like a heaven, and then the place that you live now called the Earth? What is it that you picture? And that's an important question to ask ourselves, because how you answer that question will actually uncover a bias that you might have when reading this. And so when we read this text through a modern lens, we often impose on it our modern understandings. But we have to remember this is an ancient text written to an ancient people that didn't have the modern scientific ways of thinking that we have today. And so one of the things that we must do when we read an ancient text is we have to respect what the author's trying to actually do, what he's trying to communicate to the audience he's trying to communicate to. And so right out of the gate, when we see in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, the thing that we need to know is that this is like a entry title to a story that's about to unfold. The statement is simply this. At some point, whatever that beginning is, at the beginning of something, the beginning of all things, God made what's up here and down here. The heavens isn't the space that we go when we think of like where we're going to be with God forever. I hate to say that word heaven. We might do a video on that soon. Why heavens might not be the right word to use anymore. All that to say, the space where we go to be with God forever, call it heaven, whatever you want. That's not what it's being talked about to this ancient audience. That would not have been terms that they would have understood. What they knew to be the heavens was the sky, the stuff up there, the stuff where they saw lights glowing at night and a big thing glowing during the day, that when it's daytime, it's hot, and nighttime, it's cooler. It's this space that's above them. And the Earth isn't a globe like we think of from the astronaut's perspective. A globe is the Earth that is underneath their feet. the earth and the sky. So when it says in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, the best way to understand this is that at some point, way back when, think of like Star Wars, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. This might be something like, a long time ago, God made everything. And so this is really important, because when we talk to people, or when you engage Christians that say they're a young earth, meaning that they believe that God created the earth in seven literal 24-hour period days, the thing that we're not debating here in those conversations is whether or not God made everything. Okay, so in the beginning, the author's trying to say everything that you see, God made. That's not up for debate. That's not something you need to worry about. The question that was on the minds of an ancient person was, why are we here? The conversation about material origins versus functional origins is an important distinction. And what I mean by that is to say, most people think that this Genesis 1 is trying to tell us how the material origins of the world were created. How were rocks made? How were trees made? How were mountains made? What is the material organic composition of the things that we see around us? And I'm moving slowly with this because I think this is a really, really important distinction when reading Genesis 1. If you're trying to read Genesis 1 to understand the material origins of this earth, you will not find answers. This is not a scientific book in the ways that we understand science. This is not trying to describe or prescribe how the material things, the organic matter, the building blocks of how things are made, those the DNA, the all the carbon elements involved, that's not what this is doing, okay? So I'm going to ask us for a minute, and maybe you're going, well, hold on, Joe, this is the first time I've ever heard this. My pastor has been telling me this for years. Okay, I'm just asking you to stay with me for a minute, okay? Because it's going to get good. Good. For a minute here, I just want you to set aside, right? Take a sip. Set aside that idea that this story is trying to tell something about the material origins. And on board for a second, and I'm not saying at the end of this video you have to let that thing go. I'm just, for this moment, set it aside. And consider for a minute that the author's more concerned with telling us about why things are here. Okay? So with that in the back of your mind, it says this in verse 2. So verse 1, God did it all. Whatever the all is, doesn't matter. Okay? We've got more important things to talk about. Why is it all here? Okay? A better question to ask, in my opinion. Verse 2. Now the earth was without shape and empty, okay? And darkness was over the surface of the watery deep, okay? So these are some very specific adjectives. And those of you that aren't familiar with Hebrew, which I don't expect that you are, the language that's used here to explain the state of things as they existed after God had made everything, was a turn of phrase called tovu vavohu. Tovu vavohu is a very specific word, a set of words that describe a state of existence that is like something like a non-ordered wasteland, okay? Something that's lacking purpose or function. It's something that exists, but it's in an unruly state. It doesn't serve any reason for being there, okay? This is the state of things as the story enters into. It's trying, the author's trying to get us to understand at the very beginning, God created everything. Fine. Then the state of everything is in a place of unkept, chaotic nature. And I use that word chaotic for a reason, because did you notice that there's water involved here? Over the surface there was this watery, like abyss, okay? This deep watery. In the Hebrew scriptures, when water is used, it's often described to compare it to like chaos. Imagine for a second, you're an ancient person, and you, for the first time, venture off into the sea. And when the sea starts, the wind starts blowing, the waves start picking up. Where I live, we have a reservoir called Lucky Peak. And I remember specifically out boating, wakeboarding with some friends. It was just he and I. We were out with this boat. We were wakeboarding. And I remember we saw some storm clouds roll in. And we thought, oh, we better head back to the dock. Looks like a storm's coming in. And as we were trying to get in back into dock, we were kind of, taking our time. But then everything just hit really quick. And all of a sudden, all this wind and rain, I mean, it just overtook us. We were hunkered behind the window trying to get back. Just the white caps were just intense. I mean, I almost thought we weren't going to make it back. Now, imagine you are an ancient person experiencing this for the first time. You would conclude that the water, that space out there, is chaos. It's unruly. You never know what's going to happen, and it can take you at any moment. Okay? So the Hebrews would use the term for chaos and disorder. They would describe that as water. Here's a little insider knowledge here. In Revelation 21, when we are told about the new heavens and new earth coming down out of heaven to be with us and God to be with us, it gives us all of this description of what's going to happen. And it says there'll be no more crying, there'll be no more death, there will be no more sea. Now, John, the revelator there, isn't trying to tell us that when we are with God forever, that there won't be any water anywhere. The term there, you follow me, is there'll be no sea, means there's not going to be any disorder anymore, okay? Because that's what it represents. All right, so back to this. So this is the state of everything. So it's in a tohu va-vohu. It's an uncared for, chaotic, disruptive, non-ordered existence. All right, so then it goes on to say, but the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the water. Well, that's a beautiful picture, if you ask me. If you were to picture a unruly, unkept, chaotic existence, and the question was, where is God when things are out of control? Genesis 1 begins to answer that. God is right there. God, in this instance, is right in the middle of it. He's not off in some distant, far-off place. He's right in the heart, in the thick of the chaos, of the tohu va-vohu. He is there. And for us that are reading this, and maybe even for an ancient person that would have been hearing this for the first time, and they're hearing this language of a God who created everything, and everything is in chaos, and they go, yeah, look around me. I have this king who's ruling over me, and he's taking all my stuff. The crops didn't come in this year. My kids died, in childbearing. And so, like, it seems chaotic. Where is this God? Ah, that's a good question. God is, in this story, God is right in the middle of the chaos. That's a beautiful picture. Guys, we're only two verses in. Now, as the ancient person would be onboarding this story, we need to put ourselves in their shoes. And we're going to do a lot in this three-part series. We're going to put ourselves in their shoes. So imagine for a second you are an ancient person, and you have been raised at this point to believe that there are deities that are existing that have made everything and are the reason for everything. So if I need a good crop, I got to sacrifice to the gods. gods. If I need a healthy family, I got to sacrifice the gods. I've got to make the gods happy if I'm going to get something from them that I want. Okay. This is the way that the world worked. And so the ancient Hebrews, when they started telling this story, they are entering into a conversation that has already existed since the beginning. Okay. This story of creation is not the first creation story in antiquity. The Babylonians, the Assyrians, the Persians, all of them had creation stories. The famous Enuma Elish, which talks about the god Marduk, who conquered and through war and death created everything. There were stories that were told about the gods and what they were doing in this world. And then along comes the Hebrews. And imagine sitting fireside, and a Hebrew comes and sits down next to you, and you know about the stories of Marduk and how you need to make sure he's happy and you need to offer grains and sacrifice to please the gods because you never know what's going to happen next. And the Hebrew man or woman says, have you heard our story about the God we serve? And that person says, tell me more. And they begin, let me tell you a story. In the beginning, God made everything. And that word God there in verse 1 is a term used to explain it's Elohim. It's gods. It doesn't specify a singular God. So for an ancient listener, like we see God and we go, well, yeah, that's God, the capital G God that you have in your Bible. Of course we know that. Listen, back then they didn't use the word God. They didn't have the name of God that they would have used in that moment. This is a word that explains a God. In the beginning, a God. And so the listener along the fireside, the person that's listening to the story would have went, okay, yeah, a God created everything. We know that, right? Which God are you talking about? Now that's a good question. Which God are you talking about? There's lots of gods that have created everything and we're trying to please them. We're trying to make sure that they're happy. What God are you talking about? This is an important distinction. So then the author goes on. The person sitting next to the fire, the Hebrew man or woman, says, okay, now God created everything. The Elohim created everything. And this everything was in a chaotic state. There's unordered and uncivilized, chaotic nature of the way things are. And that the listener probably would have went, yeah, no, I can resonate with that. I get that. And it says, and then the spirit of that God was right in the middle of it, which takes a turn in the story that would have been new. Normally, you have to send the offerings up to the God because the God is away from you. He is far off from you. This, the beginning of this story, is about a God who's actually in the middle of the mix. He's not away waiting for you to offer up. The ziggurats in ancient antiquity that were created, these pyramid structures, were essentially giant altars where people would have to, they believed them to be like stairways up to the heavens where the gods would come down to that place, but they would never come to be with you. You would have to go up there and put your offerings up there. The gods don't come to be with us. In this story, that's exactly where this God is, in the middle of Tovu Vavohu. What a beautiful story. What a beautiful way to begin this story. So a few questions and observations that we have here as we look back in this opening two verses. Guys, we're two verses in, right? We haven't even got to the creating and craziness, right? We are two verses in, and here are the things that we know, okay? God made everything. This God that's outlined here made everything. Okay. And at some point that everything was in a chaotic, watery deep, this unordered mess. But the spirit of this God was right in the middle of the mess. So whatever you believe about God, whatever you believe about the role that God has in this world, maybe you come from a point of view that thinks maybe the gods, or if there is a God, he would have nothing to do with us, because why? You know, maybe it's an agnostic point of view that says, well, I can't prove there's a God, so, you know, whatever, I'm agnostic. I'm maybe not atheist. Maybe you've struggled in your own faith to think, where is God when times are tough? Those are all really good questions. And the beginning of the story of that the Bible is telling us is that there is a God that is in the middle of the mess, not away from it. And so the question we got to ask ourselves then, who is this God? Who is this God that would take himself out of glory and put himself in the middle of the tohu vavohu? Who is this God? And what is he up to? What is he doing? Why is he here? What does he want from us? Those are all really good questions, not simply from an ancient audience, but also from us today. And next time in Whiskey in the Writings, we're going to get into what this God is up to on the earth. What is he doing with the tohu vavohu? Join me next time, Whiskey in the Writings, as we explore those options. Cheers. Have another sip. And we'll see you next time. Thanks for joining me.